Welcome to this offensive one.
Welcome to this offensive line. My name is Sponge and I'm joined by
Mrs. Sponge.
And this is the week 4 review. So let's start off in London, where the Falcons took on the Jags. Well, I say took on the Jags, but that wouldn't be indication of the game, because the Jags were a dominant winner here, winning 23-7. What were your thoughts on the game?
Mainly that the Falcons stayed in Atlanta. Didn't seem like they got on the plane to London. It was actually, the Jags had a really good game. Lawrence had a 21-yard scramble.
Nice.
It was a fantastic way to get yardage.
And did the Falcons have any kind of offense at all?
They had no offense and no defense.
Nothing at all. No standouts from the Falcons whatsoever.
So Bijan Robinson had a really nice one-handed catch.
Okay. I believe he went over 100 yards rushing in this game.
Possibly the only highlight for the Falcons then.
So he's been the highlight of their season, really, which obviously you would expect being the number 7 overall pick in the draft. I believe their touchdown was scored by Drake London. We got all nice London and London action going on there.
Enjoying that
fun. I really am enjoying it. I wish they had done more so we would have been able to talk about it a bit more. But that was a very nice touchdown right in the corner of the end zone as well. It was really lucky to get both his feet down. But yeah, as you said, the Jacksonville Jags were very comfortable. Trevor Lawrence looked better when the play was breaking down, where he was able to get out the pocket, make some moves, throw the ball deep. They had a lovely deep pass, which was on a broken play, where the defense just wasn't covering Calvin Ridley, which was a nice revenge for him for obviously not with the Falcons anymore. And yeah, it was just very comfortable. There was a lovely pick six from Jacksonville as well, which was just after the Bijan Robinson one-handed catch in the second quarter. One of the interesting things about this one was the broadcast.
Yes.
That they had in not only America, we also got here on Disney Plus, which was the Toy Story football. So that was really cool. There was some technical issues with it in the first quarter, which was to be expected.
Yeah.
It's live data that's been transferred into animated options. But my favourite part of that was using Slinky Dog as the chains.
Yes, you did really enjoy that, didn't you?
And when they had the penalty and he had to go back 5 yards, you seen his little back legs go back, and oh, that was fantastic. Obviously watching the side by side of the real life and the Toy Story videos was also pretty cool. Just seeing how it all worked. So I like that. I don't think there's really much else to talk about this one. The Jags stay in London.
Yep. To play the Bills
this weekend, which we'll be at.
We will be at, yes.
And the Bills were in action against the Dolphins.
The Dolphins played the Bills. That was 20-48, so not the walk away that the Dolphins had from the previous week, but I did call this game. I did say it was all about the defense, which first half proved. It was very back and forth, scoring touchdowns. Fantastic way to start the game. But then second half, I don't know where the Dolphins went. Defense went to sleep. The Bills were just walking straight through them.
Yeah, so I think the story of this one really comes down to the third down conversions, which is obviously a massive stat when it comes to the football, because if you can't convert on third down, then you're most likely punting the ball away on the fourth. and the Bills were able to have a completion of 50% on their third down conversions, whereas the Dolphins were at 30%. So that's basically one in every three drives they're getting to a third down and they have to punt, whereas the Bills is one and two. So you can see where they're scoring, how he's getting into a position. The Dolphins also fumbled and they threw an interception, so that's where the Bills defense really picked it up, because they were able to get the ball back and things. The thing that sticks out to me is the Dolphins had better rushing game. They actually had more yards than Buffalo in this one, but overall yardage, the Bills were, it was very close. It was only about 21 yards in it, surprisingly. And yeah, with Buffalo shutting out Miami in the fourth quarter, that's the thing. The teams who have won by 50 or more points, I believe, are now 5-6 win or loss the week after. So it's not unexpected that the Dolphins lost, because there is history there. If you win massively, sometimes the next week that you'll lose it. It's about 50%, maybe just a bit higher than that, that you'll lose it. So that's an interesting stat. I like looking at these stats and figuring out different weird things that happen.
So it's kind of like you use all your energy one week, you've not got it the next week.
Exactly. And yeah, I think just breaking down from the two games that we've seen, we've had the Jags who were comfortable in London beating the Falcons, and now we've got the Bills who are quite comfortable in beating the Dolphins. Those two are coming together on Sunday, and it's hopefully going to be quite a tasty match.
Fingers crossed. Next up is the Panthers versus the Vikings. That was 13-21 for the Vikings. The Panthers got the first touchdown of the game, although technically it should have been the Vikings. They had a fantastic drive down that field, and just that end zone, the Panthers managed to intercept the ball and run it down for a 99 yard touchdown return. It was fantastic. I was screaming at the telly, to which I cannot repeat what I was shouting.
And how did the Vikings follow that up with their next drive?
They punted.
Excellent. So that was the highlights of the first quarter. Yeah, that was a very odd one. The Panthers then got their field goal. They went up to 10. Then the Vikings went on another drive that went for 5 minutes. And it was a touchdown to Justin Jefferson.
Yep, he was wide open in the end zone for that catch. Definitely deserving for the effort that had the Vikings had put into their first drive of the game for it to be picked off.
Now, this one was quite the punt affair. And obviously there was an interception from the Vikings. And I think when they got into the second half, that's when the Vikings were able just to run away with it. Not obviously far enough away. It was only a one-score game that they had. But I think there's promise from the Panthers, even though they've not played well. I think you can see that there's enough potential in Bryce Young as a quarterback to be there again. He's not played as well as CJ Stroud or Anthony Richardson, but I don't think he's bad at all. I think he just needs more time. Obviously, if the offensive line can hold up and they can get a wide receiver that's not Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen's good, but he's not a difference maker at wide receiver. So I think that's where they need to improve. They are rumoured to be in the trade market for a wide receiver. Chase Claypool has been mentioned from Bears because obviously he is excommunicado from the Chicago outfit. He does seem to be a locker room cancer. So are they going to take a little go on that one? Maybe a 7th round draft pick to Chicago to take him, see what happens. I don't know. I don't think there's any real contenders that they can go to. Like, they're not going to get Davante Adams from the Raiders. They're not going to get, you know, like your CeeDee Lambs or your Brandon Ayuks or your Deebo Samuels or your AJ Browns.
I don't think they really have anything to give to get any of those top players as well.
So yeah, obviously the trade with the Bears as well is not really helping them be able to go into the trade market. So but they'll find a way. Maybe they'll have a look at Jonathan Taylor. Frank Reich is obviously the coach in Carolina now, who was with the Colts, so there is a bit of familiarity there. That might be an option. He's a very dynamic runner, but he's not a wide receiver. So that'll be an interesting one to see where they go. The Vikings, they've got the talent, but they're 1-3 now. I mean, technically they should be 2-2. They should have beat the Chargers, but they managed to out-charger the Chargers and be the Vikings. So yeah, it's a weird game that they had. Can't really make much of it going forward for them. It's just one of those games where it's like, yeah, that happened, and that's it. Speaking of the Atlanta Falcons and failed comebacks, let's go to a game that ended 28-3. The Baltimore Ravens defeated the Cleveland Browns. Do you have any interesting facts about this game?
Well, to be honest, there's a few. So the Ravens managed to get them a turnover, where it then led to quarterback Jackson managing to walk it in for their touchdown.
Okay.
Nice play there. The Browns' defense, to be honest, were leaving holes for the Ravens. Literally, just they might as well have just gone, here, on you go. There was no point. Which definitely let the Browns down. It was the defense that let the Browns down, because their offense did actually have some really good plays. They just couldn't convert it into points. If the defense had been more on the field, then actually this game would have been a lot less scoring and maybe a lot less painful for the Browns fans.
Yeah, and I think obviously you look at the game, they threw three interceptions in this one. And if you look at even the yardage, the Browns, the total yardage in this game for the Browns had was 166. Now, if you take that back to the earlier game, the Falcons-Jags game, Bijan Robinson had 105 rushing yards by himself. So that tells you, and they lost because they were terrible. So that tells you how bad the Browns were on Sunday. They just didn't have anything. Now, one thing that I've seen has come out about this is Deshaun Watson was medically cleared to play and decided he wasn't well enough to play. So he could have played, but he decided he didn't want to play. So that's one to keep an eye on. That's,
that is really interesting, because normally you see these players, they're itching to get back on the field. I've not really heard of a player who doesn't want to go back into the game once they've been medically cleared.
Yeah, so that's a very weird one. Obviously, the Ravens are dealing with a ton of injuries just now, as they seem to always do. But they had this one quite controlled.
They did.
I don't think there was any real need for them to go all out and do anything with it. Omar Jackson, obviously, 2 rushing touchdowns, 2 touchdowns over the air to Mark Andrews, who had a very nice day in fantasy on my bench. So that was handy. Not jealous about that at all. Yeah, but I think the Ravens are probably the best team in this division. The Bengals, not living up to expectations that I had for them. The Steelers are the Steelers, which I love, but not great competition. And the Browns just doing this, just not great. So, if nothing changes, the Ravens are taking this division by the middle of November.
Definitely. I don't even think the Ravens will have a problem taking this division. No problems whatsoever.
And staying with the AFC North, let's go to those Steelers, talk about their game with the Texans. I just want to say off the bat here, the Battle Red Helmets, or as you like to refer to them as, the Shiny Coloured Helmets, they are beautiful. The Texans, that beautiful red, shiny Battle Red Helmet, the Shiny Helmet.
They were shiny, they were really shiny.
I think with that red top that they were wearing, I think that should be their primary. I think they should ditch the blue and just go red. I know there's a lot of red teams.
There's a lot of red teams in the NFL.
It's so much better than the blue. That's just my opinion. Anyway, let's go on to the game. The Texans started out quite strong here. They were able to go down the field, get a touchdown on the first drive. CJ Stroud, who in the preseason everyone was writing off saying he's a bust, probably been the best rookie quarterback so far. This team is 2-2, but it feels a lot better than 2-2. And they're 2-2 because they beat the Steelers quite convincingly, 30-6. What are your thoughts on the Steelers?
To be honest, for both teams, I will say this. They're kickers.
Yep.
Definitely end their paycheck. No problem whatsoever. That's 6 points for the Steelers. Were only made by their kicker. And then, obviously, the Texans, their kicker also had 3-4 field goals. You'll have to remind me of that. What's that?
I'll get that for you right now. Three field goals. His longest was 39.
That's not bad.
So that tells you how much they were able to get into the Steelers' half, whereas the Steelers, their longest was 35, but they only had 2, so that's why they got the 6 points. They punted 5 times in this game, which they averaged 40 yards a punt, which, to be fair, this is a punter who hadn't punted in the NFL since 2017. They randomly signed him during the week. Obviously, there must have been an injury. And he started his first NFL game in 6 years. So he earned his paycheck as well.
Yep.
Unfortunately for the Steelers, which I love. Kenny Pickett went down with an injury on this one, so Mitch Trubisky had to come in.
Yep. Although, before he went off, he did actually have some good plays. He had a really good throw. Now, it was a good throw. It was down deep down the field. Only problem is, it was picked by Nelson. If it had been, it would have been fantastic. And to be honest, actually, that could have actually been a touchdown. I think, with the way that play was going, if that hadn't been an interception, it would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, so that's kind of the downfall of the Steelers team. Obviously, spoke in an earlier episode about Matt Canada being the big issue in the Steelers. There's a thing where if you look at how they're lined up, if they're in the shotgun, which is obviously when the quarterback's a couple of steps back from the centre, it's more likely they're going to pass. I think it's about 90-95% times they will pass. If he's under centre, it's going to be a handoff, and again that's around 85-90%. So it's
they're
just
easy to read.
An incredibly predictable offence, and it's not doing anything special. So, and you can have that type of offence if you have the best players to do the job, but the Steelers, they don't have
they
the
don't
best
have
players. So it's really tough loss for the Steelers in this one. The Texans look great. The division is very interesting, actually, with the Colts, the Titans, the Jags. It's a very interesting division, this one.
Definitely.
So, yeah. Moving on to Indianapolis. Oh, easy for me to say. The Los Angeles Rams and the Indianapolis Colts. This one went to overtime.
It did. First one of this weekend. Oh, last weekend.
Now, if you had told me at half time this was going to go to overtime, I would have said absolutely not.
Nope.
Absolutely not. It was 20-0 to the Rams.
Nope. 23-0
at half time. Obviously, the first possession they had in the second half, they were able to go and get a field goal. So the Colts were in a 23-0 hole. And in the third quarter, they made their comeback. So what happened? They went for a touchdown. And Matt Stafford threw an interception. But the Colts weren't able to capitalize on that one. They turned it over on downs.
Yep.
Then the Rams missed a field goal. So the Colts went 57 yards and got another touchdown to become one score from the Rams, 23-15. And then after the Rams punted, the Colts went 83 yards to go 23-23. Oh, that was in the fourth quarter, anyway.
Yep.
So we're at 23-23, and then it is punt, punt, punt. End of game. So that's when it went to overtime. And before we get into the result of the overtime, what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, in the first quarter, although, field goals this week, fantastic. Are actually some really long ones as well, with possibly two of the longer ones coming from this game, actually. The Rams had a 54 yarder and then a 51 yarder, which it seemed to be the kicker had no problems with them, because I think the stat said was 61 is his record. So
yeah, so that was Brett Maher, who was on the Cowboys last year, and not to bring it back to the Cowboys, but he was on the Cowboys last year. He missed 4 extra points in the playoffs in one game against the Bucks, so it's good to see him doing well. His shortest field goal that he made here was 40 yards, so that's pretty good going. And what happened in, obviously there was a big collapse there by the Rams defense. I don't know if it was Anthony Richardson making the plays, because obviously he's playing really well for a very green rookie coming back. That they've said he's not ready yet, he needs more time to get into it. He's played really well. I don't know if it's the combination of Anthony Richardson being able to play at a high level with his athleticism. He's very like Cam Newton in the way that he plays. Obviously not a later stage Cam Newton that you were used to. But when Cam Newton was a dynamic playmaker, still wildly inaccurate, but that's not... I'm digressing. But yeah, I think the Rams defense kind of went to sleep on this one as well, because they were up 23-0.
Up 23-0.
So I think there was a lot of, we've got this in the bag, kind of closing it off. Then the Colts were able to come back. And then I picked the Colts to win this one. So I was feeling confident after this comeback. I was like, my pick's going to come in. And what happened? The Rams went down the field and scored a touchdown in overtime to win 29-23. With Puka Nacua getting his first NFL touchdown on his 39th reception in the NFL. It's the most by a rookie through 4 weeks to start their career, which is great. He has been a fantastic find for them. He was a fifth round pick, and he's just so good. And when Cooper Kupp comes back, you've got Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, who are 1A, 1B. But Van Jefferson will hopefully get a bit more open on the Rams. The Rams are a very good team, and they could be a contender this year, I feel. And the Colts, you know, we didn't expect anything from the Colts this year. The result of the issues with Jonathan Taylor, not getting his contract, getting put onto the physically and not able to perform, and then having a big massive argument with the owner. So I think they're above expectations. So yeah, it's, I don't think there was a real loser of this game, since the Rams were able to win. If the Rams had lost to the Colts after that comeback, then absolutely
we were going to have too much fun with it.
Yeah. They would have been the loser of the... Well, I wouldn't say the loser of the week, because that's the Bears, which is to be expected by now. But yeah, that is... It was one of the more interesting games.
It was definitely an interesting game, yes.
So the Bucks and the Saints met in a NFC South divisional game. The Bucks were able to overcome the Saints 26-9. Another one where the losing team just have a kicker getting all their points. And this one was a bit odd.
Definitely. The Saints were winning the line of scrimmage. And it was actually their secondary that was letting them down. The Saints were actually doing, in my opinion, were doing quite well in the game. Whereas the Bucks were just... They weren't doing anything special, in my opinion. It was just enough to win the game. Although I think some of that had things to do with the fact that Evans got injured with a hamstring injury.
So yeah, the Bucks had to rely on Chris Godwin, which obviously isn't a bad thing to have to rely on him. He had 114 yards in this game. Devin Tompkins, a name that you might not be familiar with, got a touchdown on one of his 4 receptions. They also had Cade Otton with a touchdown. He scored a touchdown last year. I remember that name from scoring a touchdown last year. And Trey Palmer, who had 2 receptions for 6 yards, and one of them was a touchdown. Interesting one on this one is, in the first and third quarter, the Bucks didn't score any points. So at the end of the first quarter, the Saints were winning 3-0. Which, again, goes to the line of scrimmage just dominating that one.
Yep.
And then, obviously, second quarter, that's when there's only so much you can do up front. If the back is going to let you down, eventually you're going to get caught. And that's exactly what happened here. So they had, at halftime, they had a 14-3 lead, the Bucks. And third quarter, all the Saints could do was a field goal. So the Bucks didn't really have to do. They didn't have to do anything because they had a comfortable lead. One thing I liked about this was the Saints tried to get a little bit of change up. They brought Jameis Winston in, who had one attempt and threw an interception.
Yes, he did.
So I think this Saints offense is broken. Because you had Jameis Winston, you had Andy Dalton in it last year. You've got Derek Carr, who's traded over, not traded, signed after being released from the Raiders. And none of them have just been able to make it work. Derek Carr seems like Andy Dalton from last year, when he should in theory be a better quarterback. And the Saints haven't been the same since Drew Brees retired, maybe a few years before he retired, but that's
maybe it. They're missing the consistency then, going through so many quarterbacks.
And I think if you've got Chris Olave and Michael Thomas as wide receivers and you're not able to get them the ball, then is it the play calling that's the issue, or is it the fact that they're not able to get open? And then is that down to the player, or is it down to the plays? Basically, what I'm saying is, it's the play calling. And I think there needs to be changes on that offense. Not the only team that needs changes on the offense. Obviously, we talked about the Steelers earlier. But the Saints were my tip for this one, this division, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen. I think, even though the Falcons were terrible in London, I think it's between them and the Bucks for this division.
And the Cats just adding in his opinion as well.
Now onto a game where no one really cared about, apart from, well, maybe not even the fans of the teams. The Denver Broncos and the Chicago Bears.
Yes.
Quite the interesting affair they had.
It was definitely. Broncos winning the game 31-28. It was a really enjoyable match to watch, actually. Although I don't think many Broncos fans would have
not
gone to watch it.
Not for the first three quarters, no. And with this one, I think both teams have been really bad. I mean, obviously the Broncos had a bad season last year. Things in the off season, they were blaming the coaching, Russell Wilson having his own office and things like that. Sean Payton's obviously said he was changing the culture. Not convinced that's fully happened, but also not convinced they're not trying to get the number one overall draft pick. And the Bears, who have only won three games since the Queen died.
So it's the Queen's fault then?
Actually, the last time they won was 50 weeks ago. And that was against the Patriots. They don't play every week, but that their last game, we're coming up to a full calendar year with the Bears not winning a game. And they were so close in this one.
They were definitely close. Although they did have that controversial touchdown, which you don't think was a touchdown. I mean, did that foot touch?
So I think where they've gone with it is because the pylon is part of the goal line. I think because his foot touches that, that's why he's in. I think that's why it's a touchdown. Because if you hit the ball with the pylon with the ball, that is the end zone. So I think that's why it was ruled a touchdown, because his foot comes down in the end zone, and then his other foot hits the pylon when he's going out of bounds. So I think that's how they classed it as a touchdown. But yeah, Cole Kmet. Obviously they had that one, and then the second touchdown that the Bears had, he was wide open.
No problems whatsoever. That was definitely a touchdown. No question about it. The fact is as well, the Bears were on track to win this game. They were up 28-7. I mean, actually, there was a few games this week where it looked like lots of teams were turning into the Atlanta Falcons, where they would get a loss then lose it. But yeah, Broncos came back in the third quarter. It didn't help that Fields threw the interception at the field goal range line with 32 seconds to go. I mean, if that interception, definitely the Bears would have been winning their first game of the season. But nope, the Broncos got that instead.
Yeah, and I'm not convinced both teams are going to get a lot of wins this season. Obviously, the Broncos have been playing better than the Bears, which, given they've lost 70-20, is quite damning for the Bears. But there's a lot of Bears fans out there that are wanting rid of the head coach and the GM, and that seems to be this never-ending cycle with the Bears, where they get a quarterback that the coach doesn't want, and then the coach gets fired, and then the GM gets fired, and the new GM hires a quarterback for a coach, and then that coach gets fired, so they bring in a new coach who doesn't want that quarterback. It seems to be a never-ending cycle for them. And it's interesting to see where they would be if they had just stuck with Mitch Trubisky, who is more than likely going to be starting for the Steelers. So that's a interesting note to later on in the show. So yeah, the Denver Broncos were able to come back, get that late field goal, 31-28. They get their win. They have lost. They lost someone to injury in this one, Randy Gregory, but they have since released him from the team after he betrayed the Dallas Cowboys. And he is not forgiven. Bengals Titans. One team I put a curse on, apparently. The other team, I got rid of the curse by trading their running back in another fantasy league that we're in. Or I'm in. Yeah, this one was a horrible one to watch if you're a Bengals fan.
Definitely. What has happened to the Bengals? They were not there. They were not there on that field. Just the Titans were completely dominant on both offense and defense. Derrick Henry, thank you for the fantasy points. Fantastic game. Steamrolled right through that defensive line, and it was easy for him. Actually, it was easy for all of the Titans players.
Yeah, we were able to get the stiff arm back, the stiff arm special from Derrick Henry there. And the Bengals issue, there's not just Joe Burrow's calf injury and him not playing well. There's something going on with the team that's just not clicking. I don't know if it's the offensive line. Obviously, Joe Burrow's getting hit quite a bit. Could it be because he's not able to move because of the calf injury? Possibly. He is staying in the pocket a lot more. Is it affecting his decisions? Is he aware of it? I still think there's a lot more to it than just the injury. You've got Jamar Chase saying that he's open. He's always open, which is odd. It's like they're designing the plays to get other people involved when they could be getting their number one involved. It just seems disconnected, and the Titans were able to put it together. Derrick Henry was able to get going, as you said. No concerns about Ryan Tannehill in this one, which is a good thing for the Titans, since he hasn't had the greatest start of the season. I don't think we really need to talk a lot more about this one. It was fairly dominant, 27-3. Another one where the losing team has their kicker to thank for not being shut out completely. So yeah, let's leave that one where it is and move on. Now on to the NFC East showdown between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Washington Commanders. This one was not what we expected it to be.
No, wasn't anywhere near what I expected. Now, I did think the Eagles were going to win. That was pretty much set in stone. But I did not expect the Commanders to be this dominant in this game. And they were very dominant. They were actually up ahead of the Eagles. I was technically, like, the Eagles' defense didn't even come into it in the second quarter. I would say second half, but it was second quarter. But it was definitely not the game I thought it was going to be. And the fact that I even went to overtime as well. Definitely an interesting game.
Yeah, and I think obviously the Commanders taking that 17-10 lead at half time just goes to show that the Eagles aren't
invincible
and unbeatable. They're not as good as they were last year, in my opinion. And I think obviously they had a lot of turnover. They lost their offensive coordinator, their defensive coordinator, so they weren't going to be. And that's fine. They're still very good. They're probably the best team in the division, as much as I hate to say it.
It
really is. But we'll get past it. But these divisional games that we have in the NFC East, it is very odd. It's either a very close game or it's a 40-0 blowout like we had at the start of the season. And yeah, I'm getting another Cowboys reference in here. Because I can. But this Eagles team, even though they're not as good as they were last year, they're still really good.
Yeah, they're still top.
And being able to come back like they did against the Commanders. And one thing that really annoys me about the Eagles fans is if they have a bad drive or they have two bad drives, they will get on the team and it will be the worst thing ever. Like, the amount of times you're watching an Eagles home game and if the Eagles punt, the crowd crucify them when they're coming off the field. And it's like, you were just in the Super Bowl, you lost to the Chiefs by a field goal. There's no need for you to be like this, but yet you are.
Although whilst you speak about field goals, that's what won them the game.
Yeah, and they had to go to overtime to do this.
They did.
So again, it's a very close game in the division, and it took them 6 minutes in overtime to get there. It wasn't one of these Commanders have the ball and then they're able to give it up and then they just score the field goal. This went back and forth a couple of drives in overtime where they had to punt the ball away. And yeah, it's one of these games where the Eagles are able to win, which is very disappointing. But they're just able to get these wins, and the Commanders haven't played poorly. They've played, their two losses are to the Eagles and the Bills. And I think outside of the 49ers, the Chiefs, the Dolphins, and maybe the Cowboys.
Of course. Maybe the Cowboys.
I don't know if there's any other teams that could compete against those two teams and not go 0-2. They're two of the best teams in the league.
Does that mean they come in first and second?
No, definitely not. No, the best team in the league is the 49ers. Obviously, when the Dolphins win, went and put 70 on the Broncos, I had to put them number one in the list, because there's not every day that you score 10 touchdowns in a game against the Broncos or any team. But no, the 49ers are the best team in the league. I don't know why I'm talking about the 49ers when we're talking about the Commanders and the Eagles. We'll get to the 49ers later. Actually, let's get to the 49ers right now. The 49ers with another divisional game against the Arizona Cardinals. This one, obviously, we expected the 49ers to win. There was no way that the Cardinals could pull off another major upset after beating the Dallas Cowboys in week 3. And yeah, the 49ers were able to win this one pretty easily. 35-16 on this one. And I believe that you have a bone to pick with someone in this game.
Yes, Christian McCaffrey. I have him for 2 seasons on my fantasy team. What happens? He gets injured both seasons. I no longer have him on my fantasy team. I love the fact that it could be a risk to have him and he'll get injured, but no. He got 4 touchdowns for the game. Some really good catches for McCaffrey. He actually needs to thank the Cardinals defender for his 3rd touchdown, because I don't know who's teaching the defenders at the Cardinals, because who throws a player into the end zone for a touchdown? I mean, who does that? I thought you're supposed to pull them away from the touchdown. From the touchdown? From the end zone. Also for the 49ers, Ayuk had an amazing catch for 40 yards between 2 defenders. And then he had another great one later on. The 49ers were definitely on top of this game.
Yeah, and this is Brock Purdy's, again, his regular season. He has not lost a regular season game. I believe this is the 49ers'
14th consecutive regular.
I think 15 consecutive wins is the team record for the 49ers. Which is obviously a very high standard that they are. And yeah, this is why, as much as I hate to say it, they are the best team in the league. The defense is fantastic. Obviously, they're just going to get better when Nick Bosa's getting more reps, when he gets back into it, because he missed the full offseason with his contract dispute. You've got Christian McCaffrey on offense. You've got Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, who we haven't seen a lot of this season. They've very much gone into the, we just need to run the ball. And obviously, when they have the lead, there's no need for them to be throwing it. When they have had to go to George Kittle, he's been there in the middle of the field, being able to make those catches. But it's not like he's making all the plays. I mean, in this one, he had 1 catch for 9 yards. So, obviously, they're focusing on the run game. It's one of these things that happens when you have a running back that can go for 4 touchdowns in a game and have 200 yards total. So, yeah, that's the 49ers. The Cardinals.
I will say for the Cardinals, though, their rookie, Wilson, really good, actually, in that game. He was fantastic. He had got 2 touchdowns in the game and definitely one to watch.
Yeah, 7 receptions, 76 yards and 2 touchdowns. Again, another rookie with touchdowns this week. It's quite a good week for the wide receiver rookies. Zach Ertz almost had a touchdown in this one, but he just couldn't hold on to it. They're a very surprising team. Like, obviously, coming into the season, we're like, oh yeah, they're not going to play Kyler Murray at all this season. They're going for Caleb Williams. They're definitely tanking. And here they are, 1-3. Obviously, they were unlucky to exposed to the Giants when the Giants were able to come back against them, when they just had that second half collapse. They took the Commanders to the limit in week one. So, I mean, they still have the Eagles to play from the NFC East. Maybe they could beat the Eagles. You never know.
You will be celebrating that day if that happens.
I'd be happy if anyone beats the Eagles. But yeah, the Cardinals, I don't think they're going to be reaching the postseason, but I think they're going to be very respectful.
I think they could cause some problems maybe for some teams, especially later in the season, especially those who need the wins so they can either get wild cards.
Yeah, like the Rams and the Seahawks, obviously they'll play them because they're in the division. They'll definitely have issues there. Yeah, there's one of those teams that are very tricky in the league. Obviously, absolutely defying expectations for them. They don't have a great upcoming schedule. They've got the Bengals, Rams, Seahawks, Ravens. It does get a bit easier with the Browns and Falcons after that. But we'll see how they go. So yeah, that's that. 49ers on top, always were. And yeah, that's that.
Raiders versus Chargers. That was an interesting game.
Okay.
Very punty, but we'll get into that in a second. So the Chargers did win this game, 24-17. It was a great start for both quarterbacks as they both scored the first touchdowns for each team. Although they then did both throw in interceptions. But this was a very punty game, which led to the fact that the turnovers of this game decided game in the end.
Yeah, and I think obviously the Raiders without Jimmy Garoppolo, who, surprise, he's injured, not that that's happened before, had Aidan O'Connell start, who was a rookie, and I actually think he played really well, given that he is a rookie that had to come in on less than a week's notice for this game. And yeah, as you say, the turnovers were the difference. He fumbled three times. They lost two of those fumbles, and he threw the pick. But apart from that, he's a rookie, not a high drafted rookie. So he was being brought in to be a backup and to be trained to be a backup, and they decided to roll with him this week. And yeah, they have lost. But they were able to break Justin Herbert's finger in this game. So at least the Raiders will feel happy about something. It was on his non-throwing hand. So I don't think it's going to have that much of an impact into it. I could throw another Cowboys reference into here, but I won't.
You sure?
I won't. No. Yeah, I'll leave it. But yeah, the Chargers had enough in this one. They didn't actually score at all in the second half. So maybe there is something with the broken finger to keep an eye on.
Might have just been the pain of it in a game. I've never broken a bone, but I'm presuming even a finger probably does sting quite a bit.
Possibly. I mean, they were up 24-7. So that, again, there wasn't really a need to put those in, but I would be concerned about the broken finger. The good thing is the Chargers are on bye this week, so I have a little bit of a chance to rest up. Also gives them Austin Ekeler back as well, who has been missing for the last couple of weeks with an injury, so hopefully they'll be able to heal, get a bit better. Again, hopefully not too much. I did say I was going to leave the Cowboys reference, but when they do come back, they play the Cowboys, so if they could not be fully healthy for that one, I would appreciate that. Just, I would like an easy win. And now the game that I really want to talk about.
Oh, of course.
The New England Patriots 3, the Dallas Cowboys 38. 38 points. The Cowboys are back after an awful week against the Cardinals. Patriots come to town. Ezekiel Elliott comes to town with the Patriots. He gets a very nice welcome, but the team did not get the nice welcome. Oh no, the Dallas Cowboys defense had a great day.
They did. They did definitely have a great day. By getting the Cowboys' second touchdown through a fumble recovery, that was picked up at the 8-yard line from the end zones, run it down the field. I definitely wanted them to be hit out of bounds or tackled very nicely so the Cowboys did not get that touchdown.
Well, there was a very slim chance of that because it was the 8 yards that he had to run. That Leighton Van Der Esch was able to pick it up, go in, run about the end zone, have a happy dance, like we all did. And they followed that up with what ought to be an extra point.
It was, yes. Lovely stat for this.
Yeah, they actually faked the extra point and went for 2, which is the first successful fake 2-point conversion since the league changed where the extra point is in 2015. Because the extra point used to be from the 2-yard line, but there was 97% success rate in that. And the league went, no, don't like that. And they moved it back to the 15, so it's a 29-yard field goal, basically, for the extra point, instead of a 16. Which obviously had an effect for a number of years. It was down to about 76. I think it's slowly creeping up to the 90s now again. So who knows if they'll move it back a bit further. But yeah, this is the first successful 2-point conversion on a fake. And the reason that they done the fake was, this was brought up in the broadcast, the Patriots had all 11 players on the line of scrimmage. All 11 players. There was no one like outside really like blocking to that. And that was picked up by Greg Olsen, because he was like, this is really an odd thing to do on like the second extra point. Like, this is what you do when you're trying to finish a game, where you stop a field goal or an extra point at the end of a game. Which obviously for the Patriots, this was the end of the game because they were destroyed by the Cowboys. Yeah. Another thing with this one is Deron Bland had a beautiful pick six. Mac Jones got lucky earlier when he threw across the field, which quarterback play, you're not meant to throw across your body across the field, because it's just so easily to be picked off. He got away with it the first time, and then the second time, the run band was like, hello, I will have that ball, and he went the 50 yards into the end zone. It was, oh, I was so happy watching this game. So happy watching it.
Too happy.
Maybe too happy, but yeah. I don't know what this means for Sunday Night Football this week. The Cowboys, oh, it's a tough test for the Cowboys. But yeah, let's talk about the Patriots in this one. I feel like we need to give them a wee bit of chat. 38-3, that's a 35 point deficit.
Yep, it is Belichick's largest defeat in his head coaching career.
Wow. And he's been a head coach for about 30 years?
I think it was 29
years he's been a head coach. So that's a long time. I think it's obvious now that the Patriot way
is not working anymore.
It wasn't really the Belichick way. It seems to be the Brady way. I know that you're going to hate this, but I think Tom Brady was the reason the Patriots were so successful. Obviously, Belichick, great defensive coach. Not that this game would prove it, but they lost Matthew Judon on this one, and Christian Gonzalez, who's been an absolute find in the draft. Other than those two, they're probably the best two players that they have on the team, so that's a major blow for them. They have actually traded for a cornerback from the Chargers, JC Jackson, who was a healthy scratch against the Vikings the other week. The Patriots are trading for him, so he's a cornerback. So obviously he's going to take out Christian Gonzalez's role there. But yeah, I think Belichick will be out of New England sooner rather than later, and I still think they'll get him, give him the opportunity to retire. But it's going to be a "you retire, Bill, you retire" kind of thing.
Which is, although I don't like Brady, it will be a shame. He had that good run, what, 7 Super Bowls? If not, maybe more to him. I don't know what the stat is for Belichick's Super Bowls, but 6?
Six for Bill. He didn't get anything with the Browns. Or the Jets, when he was famously the head coach of the Jets for one day. Also, another interesting note, Cowboys gave Belichick the biggest loss of his career, and also retired Brady. What a team. That's America's team. Okay, Sunday Night Football, or as it's been referred to now as Taylor Swift Hides Her Jet Emissions Stories. The Chiefs and Jets were on Sunday Night Football. Aaron Rodgers showed up, tried to outshine Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift went, "Ha, no, I have Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively with me. Here I am. I'm going to be your touchdown celebration." The Chiefs and the Jets went back and forth in this one, kind of. The Chiefs got way ahead early on. They were up 17-0 in the second quarter. So this one was over pretty quickly. However, the Jets were able to come back in this one. A lot of chatter about Zach Wilson being good in this game. From what I've seen, it wasn't bad, but I don't think we can really say he was good. Obviously, he lost a fumble near the end of the game where the Chiefs were able to get the ball.
That ended the game.
That pretty much ended the game. The Jets did manage to get the ball back on that one, but was called for holding, which is quite controversial. I can see where they maybe thought there was a hold. But there was no actual hold. Maybe if they'd went for like an illegal contact, it might have been a bit easier. And also, because the flag was thrown after the ball was intercepted, it all just seemed a bit weird. But yeah, after that, obviously the Chiefs still had the ball. They were able to take the ball down, and then Patrick Mahomes slid at the 2-yard line, get a first down, and then decided to pose and tell the world that he had won the game 23-20. When we were watching the Netflix show Quarterback, obviously Patrick Mahomes was the big star in it, and Joe Burrow was made out to be the villain, you know, the nemesis, the enemy of that one. He was made to look like the bad guy. I feel like this season is Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs' villain origin story. Like, I feel like there's so much Chiefs going on. Like, you've got the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce stuff. You've got Mahomes doing the pose to go, "Look at me, I've just ended the game." Which, obviously, it's a celebration stuff, it's fine. But it just feels like there's going to be a point where people turn on the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, like, people turned on the Patriots with Brady, and they hated Brady and the Patriots because they were Brady and the Patriots, and they were always there, they were always winning. It feels like we're getting to that stage with the Chiefs now. there was a funny bit with Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes, who were like, they were talking, they were like, we never get to play each other. Every time the teams have met, so when the Chiefs and Packers in the past, either Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers have been injured.
Maybe it's just a curse then.
So if they are set to play each other, that's a sign that one of them's going to get injured, it looks like. Not a lot else to really call out on this one.
Well, Mahomes didn't have some good drives. I mean, he did have one interception that I have no idea why he threw that ball. He threw that ball straight to the Jets. Actually, at one point, I thought Mahomes maybe thought he had swapped sides. Because he could have literally ran it back to the line of scrimmage or at least gained 1 to 2 yards. He was open. He did not need to throw that ball for that interception. Okay, yes, it would technically been a loss of a down, or the fact that he would have only gained a yard or two on the down, but there was no reason for the interception. It was just I don't know, stupidity. Throw it down straight to the Jets player.
Yeah, Patrick Mahomes didn't have a great game in this one. 18 for 30, 200 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. I didn't say there was a cause, but I do want to call out Isaiah Pacheco, the running back for the Chiefs, who, he was explosive in this one. He had 20 rushes, he went 115 yards with one touchdown. He averaged 5.8 yards a carry, which is really good when you're looking at, you want 4 as your average to be good. It's a strange one. I don't think this was as close realistically as it felt like. I think no. If the Jets were able to tie it back up, if the Chiefs really wanted to, they probably could have gone down the field. Because again, Patrick Mahomes can turn it on and go. And I feel like they just felt they had the lead that they didn't need to do that. And there was only 3 points scored in the fourth quarter in this one, which is when they got the field goal to go ahead. So, Sunday Night Football, yeah. That's it. The Chiefs 3-1, Jets 1-3. Alright, let's talk about your favourite game of the week. Monday Night Football, the Seattle Seahawks and your New York Giants.
I'm giving up on the Giants. I'm going back to my original pick.
So remember, if you are to disown your team, the rule states you must support the Cleveland Browns.
I've not heard that rule. To be honest, I think I'd maybe take the Cleveland Browns at the moment, despite the fact how bad they're doing. I think I might actually even take the Cleveland Browns.
So,
although I don't think I'd look good in orange.
Why? You're wearing an orange top right now. That's a very weird statement. Like, not only are you wearing an orange top, it says orange on the top. And it has a picture of an orange. It is the most orange top you can have. I mean, at least this is a highlight of talking about your game, because your team is, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. Your team gave up 11 sacks in this game. That is one shy of the all-time record in a game of 12. And I'll be honest, I think Seattle went a bit easy on you. It could have clearly been 20 sacks that they had in this one. You could have had anyone behind the offensive line in this game for the Giants, and it would have made a difference. The Seattle Seahawks defensive line were just able to get through so fast.
Even then, I'm still on get rid of Daniel Jones. I'm sorry, but he is, in my opinion, not a great quarterback whatsoever. And I would have preferred that the fact that last year they would have actually gone ahead and gotten a new quarterback.
So I understand that. Obviously, you made the playoffs, so that can make things a bit awkward. The owners love him. And I think one thing that was obvious when the media were talking about Daniel Jones in the playoff run and the lead up to that game against the Vikings, there's things that Daniel Jones does everything right outside of the Sunday, or the Monday in this case, whereas he'll never throw his teammates under the bus. Everything is about being better for the team. I haven't seen anything come out about his press conferences after this game, so he's not said anything about how the offensive line is terrible and they need to protect him. He's probably just been like, yeah, I need to take better care of the ball because he had a few fumbles in here. Yeah. He's like, I need to get the ball out quicker. Maybe get, you know, I think he's taking more responsibility than he really should, but he is the quarterback, and that is the role. If you look at the quarterback, that's the most important position in the game. So the focus is going to be on them. And if it goes wrong, it's going to be on them, even if they're not at fault. And yet, he's not blameless. Like, there are times where he could have ran. He had holes that he could have got through.
Yep.
But I think if you're getting hit left, right and centre, then you're thinking, if I move, I'm going to get hit.
Although we did have one good point, I will say this, we had one good point. We injured Geno Smith, which meant that Drew Locke had to come in as the backup for the Seahawks. I don't know what his injury was, to be honest. Do you know what his injury was?
So it looked like it was one of the players landed on his leg/ankle. Drew Locke came out. Bunch of got into the second half, Geno Smith was back in, but he wasn't as effective, but he was also really miffed. And he was picking fights with the Giants players, which understandable. He used to play for the Giants. I say he used to play, he was a backup. And obviously he was with the Jets before that. So this was his first time in MetLife for quite a while. I think it was quite a personal game for him as well. So he was quite happy to come in and get the win. And they also were able to have a very good defensive performance in a stadium where a defensive performance won them the Super Bowl against the Denver Broncos. And never forget the opening to that Super Bowl where Peyton Manning, was the quarterback of the Broncos. The Broncos were on a terrific season. They had loads of points. They were scoring 40-50 points a game. First snap, center snaps the ball, goes over Peyton's head, and then the Seattle Seahawks recovered it in the end zone. Boom, touchdown straight away. What a game. But that's not this Monday night game. This performance was better than what they did on that February in 2014. They were dominant. Funnily enough, there was a player in that Super Bowl who played on Monday night. It was Bobby Wagner, the linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks. He got 2 sacks against the Giants. Very good performance here from the Seattle Seahawks. Not a lot to take from you from the Giants. It's not looking great.
No, we're looking for a 1-16 season, I'm thinking.
Yay. Okay, before we get into the Thursday night preview, I just want to have a schedule change that came in for week 6. No, not this week, but the week next. The Lions have been put into the late window. No games from the late window have been moved out of that window. So basically what the NFL has done is they've looked at the week 6 late slate and went, these games are rubbish, we can't have that, we need to get something exciting in. So they moved the Lions-Buccaneers game. So I'll tell you what those games were that were very boring. Patriots at Raiders.
Yeah.
Cardinals at Rams. I think that's quite a sneaky good one.
My marriage should be quite a good game, actually.
And Eagles at Jets.
Well, the Eagles will walk away with that one.
So, yeah, that was the game. That's why they've moved the Lions and Bucks there as well. So, yeah, just a quick programming note on that one. But let's get into the Thursday night football preview for week 5. You have the winless Chicago Bears against the 2-2 Washington Commanders. You've been looking into this one. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think this game's quite hard to judge. Both teams are coming off good games. Now, yes, the Bears are 0-4, but they had a good game this week, as did the Commanders. And when you look at these teams, it's hard to judge to see how they'll be against each other. However, if you look at the history of these two teams playing together, the Commanders are on top, 23-21-1, which kind of has me thinking this might be our first tie game of the season. Not too sure, but the Commanders have won the past 8 of 9 games. But then, to be honest, the Bears do need this win. I would say, if the Bears don't drop the ball like they did this week, they will definitely win. And I think that's what they need to do. If they can keep level-headed, concentrate, they could definitely beat the Commanders. And I think Bears fans need this win. But I think if it really went down to it, I think actually the Commanders may win. And I also, part of me thinks this might not be a high scoring game. It's either going to be one of those games that are like 10-3, or it's going to be like 32-35. It's going to be like a ridiculous high or ridiculous low scoring game. But I'm really undecided about this game of who's going to win. I just don't know.
So yeah, I'm looking at the stats for the season, and one of the big ones is the third down completion. Again, into the third down completion. The Bears actually have a better percentage of third down completions than the Commanders do. They're 38-33. So it's not...
That's not bad.
Overly impressive, but it's not bad. But the thing that worries me for this Bears team is they are allowing 4 sacks per game. The Commanders are allowing 6 sacks per game. But the Bears only have 2 sacks this season. The Commanders have 13. I think Justin Fields is going to get hit a lot in this one.
Yep.
So either we get the weeks 1, 2, and 3 Bears where they're not able to do anything on offense and their defense is bad and they just suck, or we get the week 4 Justin Fields, which is a bit better than where they were. He had a career game last week. He's able to get out the pocket and he's able to get away from some of these sacks. So, again, it's another Bears game that's coming down to, is Justin Fields going to be able to make plays with his legs? And that worries me because they've not been able to really do that a lot. He's rushed 28 times in this season. So it's about 7 rushes per game that he's got. It's got 134 yards and a touchdown on that. But if you think they have 50 to 60 plays in a game and you have a running quarterback who's only running for 7 of those plays, you're not going to get the success.
No, he at least needs to double those running plays.
So, yeah, that's a big concern there. Obviously, Sam Hill has thrown less touchdowns as well. They have thrown the same amount of interceptions, but just 5. So I think we'll see at least an interception in this game at some point. I think the big difference here is going to be Brian Robinson. I mean, he has 3 touchdowns, 261 yards already this season. And we're only 4 games in. So he has the potential of hitting 1,000 yards this season. So very interesting in that. I think he's going to have quite the game because the Bears, they've allowed 1,550 yards this season already. That's a lot. So, again, you're talking 300 yards per game, which obviously, we're in a passing league now, you would expect quite a high amount, but yeah, they're very much similar. The Bears are ranked 21st in offense, the Commanders are ranked 20th. Defensively, that's where the change is. 28th and 21st. Passing, Bears are 24th, Commanders are 20th. Rushing, the Bears are actually better, they're 13th, whereas the Commanders are 17th. And that's Khalil Herbert. Again, he's got less yards than Brian Robinson, but based on the amount of attempts, he's actually getting a higher average. So it's a very, very interesting one. I think it's going to be a ground game on this one. I'm going to go, I think the Bears have to win at some point. It's really bad when you go almost a full calendar year without winning. And they did play the Commanders on Thursday Night Football last year as well. But I don't think they're going to win this one. I'm going to go 27-13 to the Commanders. Thanks for listening to This Offensive Line. If you like the podcast, please review. If you have any feedback, you can give it to us on Twitter or X, as they like to call it now. We are This OL Podcast. TikTok, you can go to This Offensive Line. Instagram, This Offensive Line. Facebook, we're also on that. This Offensive Line is the page. Just thank you for listening to the podcast. And we'll catch you for the preview.